entertaining.
Was there an Adam? Was there an Eve? Or did we evolve from what we conceived? Either way, we got what we needed when the sun shone down on the Garden of Eden.
Don't you know we're gonna have a solartopia, solartopia, solartopia. Don't you know we're gonna have a solartopia all over God's green world?
Well, we bit that apple and the garden was lost, and so we had to work to pay the cost. And so we went digging into the ground and started to burn many things we found. But
started to burn too many things we found. That's the wonderful Dar Williams singing with Pete Seeger and David Burns, the Solartopia song. Another hour we have here at PRN-FM. Thank you, crew in New York. We're joined by a couple of really great and powerful guests. It was a really important topic to talk about, abolishing medical debt. Jerry Ashton, you with us?
Yes, I am. Thank you.
Oh, good, good, good. And Craig Antico, you with us?
Actually, you have Judah Freed, the editor and publisher.
Oh, Judah Freed is with us. Okay, Judah, great to have you with us. And we're going to talk about this really critical issue of being bankrupted, our whole country drowning in $1.5 trillion of medical debt, ruining people's lives, forcing people to choose between health care and bankruptcy. Utterly outrageous. Our incredibly high medical costs, our incredibly corrupt medical system. It's a really, really important topic. I do want to jump in first with a couple of things. We're on the brink now, finally, of the hearings that we voted in the majority in the House of Representatives to conduct. Michael Cohen apparently will be testifying next week. And I just want to warn people, I don't, as if you needed to hear it from me, that the nutcase in the White House is probably about to burn Venezuela to the ground in order to divert people's attention from these hearings. The key phrase in these upcoming hearings is two words, money laundering. Many months ago, probably already a couple of years, Steve Bannon, one of Trump's fascist consigliere's, predicted that Trump's downfall would be money laundering. And the real question is, we've had great guests on, Robert K. Johnston and Craig Unger among them, discussing the fact that Trump's entire financial history is bound up in money laundering, criminal activities for primarily Russian clients who have made a dormitory out of his Trump Tower there in Manhattan. But we will see if the Democrats in the committees and if the Mueller report, which people are saying is going to come out soon, gets into this most critical of all his criminal past, really, because money laundering is really where it's at. He was bankrupt, God knows what, four, six times, $4 billion in debt, and then suddenly he's rolling in cash, and it was Russian cash. The question is not really, did the Russians rig the 2016 election? It's how long have they owned Donald Trump? And it's just the reality of the situation. Donald Trump is really the payback, or karmic payback, for all the horrible dictators who put in power in so many other countries. I mean, compare him to Pinochet, Somoza, Mobutu, Suharto, all the horrible pigs that have robbed their countries, tortured their people, decimated their being. Trump is just really a mild dose of what we've done to so many other countries. Let's just hope we get through this. And I do want to mention one other thing real quickly before we get to medical debt. The most important of all the legal cases that are going to be coming up in terms of the future of American democracy has to do with libel laws. Clarence Thomas, the great genius on the Supreme Court, has made a point of saying that he does not believe that it's constitutional to protect people who criticize public officials from libel suits. And if that, it's the Sullivan case from the 60s, if it's overturned and the court does allow an official like Trump to sue people who make fun of him, like Alec Baldwin, for example, or Stephen Colbert, you can kiss our democracy goodbye. That will be the end. The only thing that's saving us at this point in time is ridicule, ridiculing the president, pointing out his criminal behavior. If this guy was able to sue people, for criticizing him, that's the end of it. So watch that very carefully. Let's see what happens here. But we know that Trump will bring a lawsuit against somebody who's been criticizing him, and it'll go to the Supreme Court. And better hold your breath, because that's going to be the key. If these public officials can sue people who criticize them, that's the end of our democracy. So that's the key. You guys, Greg and Jerry, got anything to say about this man here at the top of the
Judah.
Judah. Yes, I'm sorry.
Craig Antico is one of the three authors of End Medical Debt, and I'm blessed to be the editor and publisher of the book. Jerry is the lead author, and the other author is Robert Goff.
And the title of the book is?
End Medical Debt. The subtitle is Curing the $1 Trillion Unpayable Medical Debt Crisis in Our Country. That's a
all right, so before we jump into that
subtitle, but that's the idea.
That's all right. I like long subtitles. Long subtitles are good. So, Judah, as a publisher, what do you got to say about this latest scare here from Clarence Thomas about allowing public officials to sue people who criticize him?
Well, I'm in favor of absolute free speech, which is why we were able to publish a book on medical debt that sort of goes against some of the conventional thoughts about how the medical system is set up. And so I'm all in favor of people being able to tell the truth.
All right. I should hope so. Jerry, you want to chime in on my little rant here at the beginning of the show?
Well, being in our trio of authors, it's interesting the way that Judah pulled our thoughts together, because we have separate chapters. Sometimes we'll address the same subject, but we'll do it with strong points of view, which means one of us might be sued by by someone in the powers that be, while the other two would have to be co-conspirators, even though we might have entirely different views. So, you know, getting out different points of view, that's the only way we learn. And when you try to crush somebody's so-called dissent, our country wouldn't exist if dissent were crushed.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And so while we can still say it, I want to say this, Donald Trump, you're an idiot. You're a complete Shonda. You're an embarrassment to our species. You need to resign. You need to put on an orange jumpsuit and go straight to prison. You were born into a mafia family. And of all the people I've ever witnessed in public life, Donald Trump was the one who's most completely lacking in empathy, compassion, humor, grace, honesty, integrity. It's astounding. But he is payback for all the horrible dictators we put in power elsewhere. So let's remember that when we deal with him. Go ahead.
Well, I think that payback is exactly what we're experiencing in our what we call healthcare here in America, the payback for having a system which is not really health-based as much as it is profit-based, and where we've allowed big pharma, big hospitals, what have you, insurers, to have control really over the final say of whether or not we live or die, whether we are healthy or unhealthy. Now, that being said, I want you to know that as writers of a book, we have every right to complain and make pointed references to the idiots that exist and continue a system that is unworkable. And at the same time, you may not be aware of it, but the three authors also founded a charity called RIP Medical Debt, in which, as a nonprofit, we're apolitical. And by being apolitical, that means we get donations across the spectrum. And these people across the spectrum have one desire only, and that's to relieve another American of the pain of unpaid and unpayable medical debt. So I'm kind of balancing two different worlds. Maybe you could describe it better, Judah.
Well, I don't want to lose track of this.
Go ahead, Harvey.
On your Amazon page here, talking about your book, it says you authors are donating 100% of your royalties to forgiving medical debt. So that's pretty. And the name of your publishing house is Hoku House, and you got some pretty impressive blurbs here from Nancy Naparko, a friend of mine, and medical debt explains why only Americans risk the probability that medical treatment will be financially inaccessible or that a family will be made destitute from a serious injury or disease. Alan Grayson, a former U.S. congressman, I went into the hospital overnight and the bill was $25,000. Jeez, it's time to lift the yoke off the necks of the most vulnerable and defenseless members of society, precisely what End Medical Debt does. I will show you, I'm on Medicare, thank God. That was my mother's mantra at the end of her life, thank God for Medicare. And I had a minor heart ablation. I had tachycardia. My heart would just start beating like crazy. Really, it was annoying. And so I went into the Cleveland Clinic on December 31st, 5 or 6 years ago. It was my birthday. And I was on the table for 3 hours. I was in the room for one night. Caught a cold. It was freezing in there. And I got the printout of the bill. Thank God I didn't have to pay it. I got the printout of the bill. They didn't even cut me. All they did was send a camera and a soldering iron up into my heart. And the bill for 3 hours on the table, not a surgery, and one night in the hotel room, in the hospital bed, was $60,000. I mean, God, you know. And if my parents, who were wonderful people and healthy almost all their life, in the last year of their life, they both got they had the medical challenges, probably ran up $1 million worth of medical bills. Had it not been for Medicare, I wouldn't have a house. We would not have been able to put my children through school. So you guys are doing God's work here. So tell us exactly what this is, what you're doing.
Well, let's take a look at this world of healthcare through the eyes of a bill collector, because you're talking to one. Craig Antico and I were bill collectors. We had a consulting firm in that field. We were experts in health care. The third author, Robert Goff, was the executive director of the NYU Physicians Association. So the three of us had a pretty good idea from beginning to end of what happens when someone gets sick or ill. We're really that far away from a financial disaster. Really, only about 7% of Americans will have a hospital stay, but those 7% keeps revolving every year, and new people are experiencing the same pain, which is, if you don't have insurance, you're up a creek. If you don't have Medicare or Medicaid, you're up a creek. You can even be up a creek if you're insured, because 60% of all bankruptcies in the U.S. are medical debt related, and of those, 70% of the people that declared bankruptcy actually had what we call insurance. So these are the things that we're railing against. These are the things that we're pointing out to people.
John, mind-boggling.
So where I came into, Harvey, is that Jerry and Robert wrote a book called The Patient, the Doctor, and the Bill Collector, which I published in the beginning of 2016. That summer, somebody handed a copy of the book to John Oliver, who had been working on a piece on debt buyers who just buy and sell debt in the secondary market.
and they had acquired approximately for about $60,000, about almost $15 million of medical debt in Texas. And naturally, they didn't want to collect it, although they had a legal right to do so. And that was kind of the point of his piece, to show how easy it is to buy and collect debt. And so because they contacted somebody who had given a copy of the book, it was associated with RIP medical debt, they contacted the charity, and the charity forgave this $15 million of medical debt on the air. He pushed this giant red button, and the streamers came down, and lights flashed. And it was a pretty big news story in the summer of 2016. So along came the Trump administration and the votes on whether or not Medicare was going to be abolished. Not Medicare, but the Obamacare was going to be abolished. And John McCain, by one vote, kept it alive. And I contacted Jerry by email and said, you know, we need to update the book so it reflects this. And Jerry's thought was, we need to write a whole new book. So by that point, Jerry had new insights. Robert Goff was no longer working for this Physicians Network, and so he wanted to be able to speak freely without without the constraints that he had before. And meanwhile, Craig had some thoughts he wanted to share too. And so End Medical Debt came out of that, and that published in December. And now we have the hardback and paperback out. I'm now getting ready to put out the ebook as soon as that gets finalized. And, so the timing could not, in my opinion, be any better, because we have a national debate about the medical debt, not medical debt, but medical costs. And people have not been talking so much about medical debt, although Stacey Abrams mentioned it, other politicians have been mentioning it. And so it's starting to get into the consciousness that it's not just the costs are high, and it's not just they're devastating, but the debt that perpetuates after you have been in the hospital can make you sick in and of itself. Jerry, talk a little about the consequences of having medical debt on your credit report, for example. As a collector, you know this infinitely.
Well, there are no good consequences of debt, period. There is such a thing as good debt. Buying a house, that's a good debt. That puts a roof over your head. Buying a car so you can get to work, that's a good debt. But nobody elects to have a heart attack. Nobody elects to have cancer. Nobody says, I'll have three of those and one of those. What happens is it comes on, or the accident comes on suddenly, and we're faced with a new reality. Where we were once healthy and able to do things, all of a sudden we are one paycheck short of losing our house. So when you think of the economic damage, which is never talked about, everybody talks about how important it is to have health care. Yeah, absolutely. But the point is to have health care in which there is no debt as much as possible. We're the only industrial nation that doesn't have universal health care. In Japan, which has the greatest lifespan and longevity, the greatest health of any population, they're number one, they have total universal health care. They live the longest, they live the best. If you go to the Scandinavian countries, once again, you're looking at the fact that because they pay into a system where they don't have to worry about going bankrupt, they don't have to worry about caretakers, that they have paid into it because it's a communal problem. That indeed, the fact that we don't have that right now, all you have to do, as you well know, Harvey, is you follow the money. Who's making the money? If they're making money off of this, they have skin in the game to keep it the way that it is. So when we take a look at our legislators, and by the way, End Medical Debt should be on the desk of every one of our Congress's desks, and read. And if these people had to experience what Alan Grayson experienced, all of a sudden it gives you a whole different perspective. So I'm really tired of politicians being influenced, if not bought, by major organizations to sway their opinions, to give up the benefit and the welfare for their citizens and take advantage of the donation that they get so they can continue their political career while the rest of us suffer. So I get a bit annoyed by that.
Well, it's a pretty amazing situation here. Run us through a scenario of someone who gets sick doesn't have, even with insurance. Well, how is it? Let's take it one step at a time here. First of all, how is it that people who have insurance can wind up with these debts?
Well, do you know what deductibles are? Deductibles can be $8,000, $10,000, $12,000 a year. That's what the insurance company requires you to pay in before they even think about covering something. Then you take a look at the co-pays. Then you take a look at the small print. You take a look at the fact that you're in a hospital and someone out of network, which is a claustrophobic way of insurance companies being sure that the doctors who are included in their insurance programs are paid the least that they can. But here's someone out of network. The anesthetician walks in, spends about 10 minutes with you, or an hour maybe, and walks away with a huge bill, which guess who's responsible for? You are, even though you have insurance. Does that give you a flavor?
Well, you know, I'm spoiled now. I'm 73, so I've had Medicare for 8 years. And I haven't paid a copay, and I haven't paid, out of network. I don't go to doctors who don't take Medicare. And
that's correct.
I do find that the doctors I go to are glad to get Medicare. That wasn't always the case, I don't think. But I guess Medicare is paying decent these days. And, of course, you know, as far as I'm concerned, that's what everybody should have. I mean, I have five kids, and I'm in double figures.
You're speaking to the choir here. And the reality about medical debt, you say, well, how does it happen? Well, who doesn't have medical debt, either themselves or tangentially in their families and friends? Debtors are the collateral damage of a flawed healthcare system.
So, Harvey, it might be helpful to share this.
Okay.
There's chapters in the book that go directly into explaining how the insurance industry evolved from originally mutual benevolent associations into the insurance conglomerates we have now. There's a chapter in there that talks about how the medical industry evolved from community hospitals, local charity community hospitals for the most part, into the for-profit enterprises they are now. And it's very interesting because I think it's Robert that makes the point that the relationship has changed from the patient-doctor relationship to a relationship based on not so much healing, but based on revenue. And it changes the entire dynamic. And I think the way he wrote about it was really clarifying for me. And I can probably share something else on a personal level that might make sense to your listeners. I'm a cancer survivor. I'm 68.
Well, congratulations.
In 66, while I was helping to put out the first book, I was fighting for my life with cancer and nearly died three times that year. If it had not been I just got on Medicare just like about 3 months before I was diagnosed.
Oh, my
God. And between the Medicare and the supplemental plan, I had the top-of-the-line supplemental plan, which was affordable, you know, even though I wasn't making much money. But through because I'm an elder in AARP, I was able to get a supplemental plan that I could be able to get through this whole experience without a whole lot of medical debt. I mean, last year alone, after two surgeries, when this first started, last year I did an immunotherapy, and that alone would have been $100,000. Because I was covered by Medicare and a supplemental plan, my out-of-pocket has been very little and within my means. But a lot of people don't have that. And it's scary, the impact that, and I think the other thing that's really important to bear in mind is, go ahead, Harvey. I'm you had a question.
No. Go ahead. Continue, because this is, I mean,
I got one related
thought my story.
That is also in the book.
I'll tell you my story real quick. Let me tell you my story real quick. I was diagnosed with a tumor, which is still there. All the doctors, I went to, because I had Medicare, I was able to shop. And so I took 9 months out of my life I resigned my teaching position. Thankfully, I was able to get it back. And rather than the first doctor I saw, I had cracked my rib on a bicycle. And when they x-rayed my chest, they saw this tumor, plain as day. And I get it, the doctor takes me in a room and says, "We have to operate yesterday." And I said, "Well, is it cancer?" He says, "We don't know. We got to take it out." And I was stopped from doing the surgery by a holistic doctor. He said, "Maybe you should take a look at this." And so I spent 9 months. I went to 2 dozen doctors, all of whom, you know, the oncologists, of course, immediately wanted to operate. And then, but the holistic people said, "Well, maybe you should wait." So long story short, I was able to cover all my bills from this excursion into the world of cancer with Medicare. And I came out of it with the conclusion that it wasn't cancer. And it wasn't cancer, and I'm still alive because it wasn't cancer. And so it's easy for me to say this, but had it not been for Medicare, I would not have been able to do this, you know, tour of duty, and I would not be alive. And there's just no way.
Well, we need to talk to the people who are not as fortunate as the three of us. As I'm up in that age range too. There happen to be 43 million Americans right now, and guess how much money they owe in past due medical bills? $75 billion. That's your neighbors.
That's just on
credit report. That's your kids. That's your family. That's members of the church. Whoever. Here's some more stats that kind of blow your mind. 1 in 3 Americans struggle to afford the cost of medical care. These are statistics that are real and verifiable. Medical debt lingers on a credit report. I bet you haven't had that misfortune, but one mark on your credit report can drop it from 30 to 70 points. And there are 15 million Americans right now who have only one medical mark, one mark against their credit report, and the majority of those marks are medical from one doctor bill, one hospital. That stops you from getting
horrible.
A job, maybe. It stops you from getting a good credit card with good rates. It stops you from getting that apartment that you'd like to rent. So these are the collateral, the bodies that are left over from the very fact that you dare to get sick in a society that allows people to have to go bankrupt or broke. People will eat through their life savings trying to pay off their medical bills. As a bill collector, I never talked to anybody who didn't want to pay their bills, but I talked to a lot of people who simply could not. So in our charity, and we started this charity as a couple of bill collectors kind of pay back for the work that we've done, and our charity, which is truly a charity, people have to be 2 times the poverty level or below. You and I and Judah don't fit into that. Insolvent. Or they're putting out 5% out of pocket, 5% of their annual income to pay medical expenses. Now, that is the kind of problem that Americans suffer from that nobody else in the civilized higher societies deal with.
One of the things
that
really hit home for me while I was editing medical debt was that when somebody has this ding on their credit report, Jerry mentioned it, it can keep you from getting a job, which then prevents you from being able to earn the money to be able to pay the medical bill, even if you want to. So it's a real catch-22. So I mean, this is, you know, there's another chapter in several chapters, the whole last third of the book goes into the various solutions that are proposed for our broken healthcare system. Jerry talks a lot about Medicare for all. There's also looking at the idea of making Medicaid an opt-in program, so that people who qualify financially for Medicaid now would get it automatically. Wouldn't have to sign up for it. They would get it automatically. In fact, the proposal is they would actually have to drop out deliberately in order not to be covered. So the people that can least afford to have an emergency or a crisis would be the ones who would be covered. There's also an analysis of the refill and replace thoughts. There's also the idea of how we deal with medical data as being something that could be done in a way that could lower costs. There's also just things we could do with, you know, the phrase is personal responsibility. It would take things that improve our health so we have fewer costs. And What I love about the book, Harvey, is that it just goes through realistically, pragmatically, what led us to the current crisis that we're in, and then goes through the different options so that people can decide for themselves, you know, where they want to put their energies in terms of creating solutions. So
well,
for me, it's
about this,
educational and important, and there's not another book out there like it so far. And so it's necessary in my judgment.
Well, tell us about this charity. Tell us how you, the mechanics of how you pay off medical debt, what the ratios are, and how you choose whose debts you're going to pay off.
Okay, let's take a look at the fact that charities exist because those who have resources are attempting to care for those who do not. That's charity. It's taking care of, yes, you are your brother's keeper in that sense. Now, when we look at inequality, and Judah shows a wonderful quote from Martin Luther King saying, of all the forms of inequality, injustice in health is the most shocking and inhumane. So if those kind of injustices exist, as a charity, we came into existence to sweep up after the parade. We're like a MASH unit that landed in a battlefield. Our job is to take care of the wounded, not to argue with the generals or protest the war, unfortunately. So we know that we may be cleaning up after the parade, but we also know that we're drawing attention to this thing. Now, the book and your program is making it possible that people are becoming aware of the other costs of a healthcare system that's broken. Now, if you take a look at us as a remedy, what we do as former bill collectors, we know the industry. When you get sick, this is how it works. You get sick, you go to the hospital, you get out of the hospital, they send you bills, you pay the bill or not. If you don't pay the bill, they have bill collectors inside that call you. When they get tired of calling you, 2 or 3 months, they send it out to a collection agency. The collection agency calls you for a few months, and once again, they are totally wasting their time because if you'd had the money, you would have paid them. So it's not like these are deadbeats. These are human beings, our brothers and sisters and neighbors who simply don't have the money. At some point in time, at least one-third of America's hospitals will sell their debt to a debt buyer. Now, these are the people in every industry that come in and look at the disaster and say, how can we make money out of this? So a debt buyer will go to a hospital and say, well, I see you have $100 million worth of unpaid debt there. It's not doing you any good. I happen to have $5 million. Why don't we make a trade? And then your debt is purchased, just like John Oliver purchased a debt from a debt buyer. It's purchased from the hospital, and then the debt buyer will either proceed to chase it down for 100 cents on the dollar, even though they paid a nickel, or they will sell it off to a collection agency and make a profit that way. Where do we come
so
in?
All this goes into really in detail in the book. And there's also a whole chapter that Craig Antico wrote, which talks about what individuals can do for their own situation so that they can look at how can they avoid medical debt, what can they do when they have it, how do you deal with bill collectors, how do you deal with the hospitals. Some people, for example, may not know that if they qualify for Medicaid, it's possible in some cases Medicaid might pay off some overdue bills that you acquired before you got on Medicaid. So the book lays out, you know, it's not just talking about the grand theory of what's happening and why, which is important, but it also talks specifically about what individuals can do to address their own medical debt crisis in their own personal lives, which is, you know, for me, I mean, if I wasn't blessed by Medicare, I would be I'd be running to the store to get this book, I have to admit. As the editor, I get to have a bunch of them like to hand away. But
well, if I was to,
it matters,
what,
my judgment.
What ratios are we talking about? If I was to donate $108 to your Buy Medical Debt foundation or charity, how much medical debt, and say I wanted to choose somebody, can you do that? Can you, like, say I know somebody who's got medical debt that's destroying their life,
yeah,
and I want to go through you guys.
Let me address that.
To pay
I'll
it
address
off.
That and answer your question. First of all, as a charity, we buy debt in bulk. It's a random act of kindness. At this point, even though we have wonderful analytics, we're not able to take a single person's debt and follow it down and buy it and abolish it. We're just not equipped to do that. So that's not possible. As a debt purchaser, our job is to go through those analytics to be sure that the person that we're benefiting is going to be helped. How do we help? At 100-to-1 odds, a dollar is $100. $10 is $1,000. $100 is $10,000. That's the kind of impact that you can have through our charity, our IP medical debt.
So if I gave you $108, how much debt would I be medical debt?
$10,800.
Yeah, it's a 1-to-100 ratio. Huh? That's very hard when someone buys the book. After all the costs that go into book distribution and production and all that, the authors get about $5. And I'm as the editor, as the publisher, I'm keeping like 15%. The authors are getting 85%, which is the reverse of what it normally is in the book trade. So that $5 forgives about $500 worth of debt, depending on the portfolio they bought. And so it's a lot of bang for the buck. Not only do you get to address your own medical debt situation, you get to maybe help somebody else with theirs. So it's, what's that old phrase from the 70s? A win-win scenario.
Wow.
In this case, maybe
that's
it's
amazing.
A win-win scenario.
So your book is End Medical Debt. The name of the publisher is
Hoku House.
So I'm looking at it at Amazon. Yes. Hardcover is $25.95, paperback $15.95.
Thank you.
And the authors are Jerry Ashton, who's with us today, Robert Goff, Craig Antico, and Judah Fried. You're the editor.
Editor, right? And publisher.
Editor and publisher. And do you have a website people can go to buy it off your website?
They can go to my website and get links to everywhere where you can buy it. It's hokuhouse.com, H-O-K-U, hokuhouse.com. In Hawaii, hoku means star, so I guess you'd say I live in Star House, but I work in Star House.
Oh, okay.
But hokuhouse.com. And just click the link to the book. It's very prominent right on the homepage.
So there's $1 trillion of medical debt in the United States. And, of course, it's killing people. Now, what is your solution here? It says, End Medical Debt delves into the most popular proposed solutions, repealing or replacing the Affordable Care Act, insurance reform, drug price controls, adding a Medicare option to the ACA, a Medicare for All. What's your preference here? I mean, being on Medicare for all these years, I like Medicare for All, at least as best I can tell. Since it's been so good to me, is that your prime advocacy position? Is Medicare for All?
Well, it's a little tricky because being a charity, they can't actually advocate any one particular position. Because then they get stuck in that bind that charities do of being a political force, and they can't do that. If you ask individuals, but not representing the charity, Craig is a conservative. Robert is moderate and Jerry is progressive. So they're each going to have their own viewpoint. And the book balances their viewpoints and says, factually, if we did it this way, here's what you have to think about. If we do it that way, here's what you have to think about. I mentioned to you in an email, I think, about Medicare for All. If we do the current Medicare system, which only covers 80% of a cost, that's still going to leave 20% uncovered, which would still leave an opening for insurance industry to be able to sell policies. If we do the European-style universal health care coverage, that means there is no private health insurance, even though you can still insure your car and your home and your boat and whatever you might want to insure. But health insurance – oh, here's a really important point, and this is something that Robert talks about. Insurance originally followed the model of trying to insure people against rare events like an automobile accident or a fire, right?
Right.
Health care costs are every day or constant. And so the whole insurance model doesn't really fit. So what they have to do to make money to be able to stay afloat financially, viable as a business, to be able to sell you car insurance with rare occurrences, that model, when they think about how am I going to make money from health insurance, you end up with high premiums, you end up with high deductibles, you end up with a lot of restrictions on your coverage. You know, for example, the whole battle over pre-existing conditions is part of that whole thing, that if they're going to sell health insurance, how are they going to stay as a viable business, whether you are pro-business or not? That's just a practical question. And all those things, whether you're from left, right, or center, you got to look at it realistically and say, what choices can we make that are going to make a difference? So the book lays out those options so readers can decide for themselves. Jerry, I know you have your own preference if you want to speak for yourself.
Well, I'm in my perfect world, there wouldn't be insurance companies. In my perfect world, a pharmaceutical industry would be rewarded on the basis of curing and not on the basis of spending more money every year to advertise their product than they are spending on research. In my perfect world, we would have no hospital conglomerates. We would have smaller hospitals and a lot more general practitioners, because this is your gateway. These are the people that keep you out of the hospital. So we don't have enough of those people. So I would say that if you look at Medicare versus Medicaid, I believe Medicaid is probably a better choice, because there is no deductible. There is no donut hole. There is no way of you having to come up with money out of your pocket, because it's taken care of. So Medicaid has superior coverage than Medicare. No copays, no deductibles, broader benefits, much better drug coverage. That gives you an idea. The people that are pushing Medicare, which, by the way, Medicare dates back to 1965, when they were struggling to try to make sense out of things. It doesn't know how to deal with pediatrics, obstetrics, not to mention mental health and drug rehab. No long-term coverage. None of that is covered by Medicare. So that simply shows the ignorance of the people who are proposing that. And, of course, shame on the population, unfortunately, for embracing something that they know little about.
That's very interesting. I hadn't really confirmed that, because I have a backup on Medicare. So I help support the insurance industry with my monthly payment to the secondary coverage. So I get these bills they're statements, actually, from the treatment that I get, and then it says, well, this is left unpaid, and they could come after you, but I assume that it's my secondary coverage that picks that up. So if I didn't have dual, and it's actually, between the two of them, it's, you know, it must be about $800 a month. It's not all that cheap.
Imagine where your $800 a month could go better. If you didn't have even what you consider to be decent coverage.
Right.
And if it weren't for Medicare, when my mother passed away and my father passed away, and eventually you and I, if it weren't for that coverage, our families would be hard-pressed to keep their own finances together, much less
decimated.
The fact that they're
totally
also
decimated
caregivers.
And Harvey, so here's the side of it that most people don't think about, which is the impact on doctors. Independent physicians can lose their practice over medical debt, because unlike a hospital, they don't routinely like to just send stuff to a collection agency to be able to make it. And oftentimes they will let a patient slide on paying a debt because of their own loyalty to the Hippocratic Oath and do no harm, right? They don't want to put the patient into more stress and might damage their health even further. And so they let the patient go, and then their practice is in danger. That's why about half of all physicians, and one of the chapters really goes into this right now, are employed rather than trying to maintain a business as a private physician. I was blown away. I have to tell you honestly, when I was editing this book, even though I've been assisting RIP for a couple of years since the first book, consulting with them, I learned stuff that even I didn't know, and Yeah, and I've been through it personally, and I've been working with the charity to be able to support them.
Well,
so,
Harvey,
I wish we had time to go every chapter by chapter. But
go ahead, Jerry. You were going to jump in?
Yeah, Harvey, yeah, I have a question for you. Do you have any veterans in your audience by any chance?
Oh, yes. Well, I was at the 1968. I was at the 1968 Democratic Convention, and I got the crappy out of me. But other than that, no, I was not. None of my family has been in the military, so that part we've missed. But let me ask you guys this question, because we're actually getting down to the last 15 minutes here. If you were to pick a country, the healthcare system of a country, which one would you pick for the United States?
Well, you know, having not lived in a bunch of other countries, it's really difficult for me to be able to say which one I would choose. I would say anything better than what we have, I would happily go to that particular country. And, you know, I was intruding on your conversation a bit earlier with Judah because I asked you a question, and that is, to the point of what the book is talking about, do you have any veterans in your listening audience? And
I'm sure we do. Yeah,
it is.
Yeah,
young,
so this is an important chapter in the book on veterans medical.
Yeah. Well, tell us about it. Tell us about this situation with veterans.
Yeah, I have a chapter in the book called "No Thank You for Your Service."
Yeah, I know what you mean.
You know what I mean. I'm a former Navy veteran myself. I put on my uniform for the first time in 50 years to do a parade a couple of years ago, and I had people come to me and say, thank you for your service. And, of course, that's been a little while since I've had that service. I appreciated the thought. Then I said, well, really, if the best way to thank a veteran for their service is to be sure that they are rewarded or paid for the time that they spend in the military to defend our country. And what I discovered, thanks to a friend of mine who's 95 years old and a World War II veteran, was that, and in some research I did in a trip down to D.C., is that veterans do not get the health care that people believe they do. That's part of the illusion of our system, that it's, number one, the best system in the world. No, it's number 17. We have the best life expectancy. No, it's number 12. So if you go through that, and then you take a look at our myth about servicemen, that we take care of those men and women who come back after serving us, no. In the chapter, I talk about three different servicemen and the problems that they were having, everywhere from liver fluke for people in Vietnam,
burn fits.
World War II, still people that are not quite covered. So it's insane. It angers me.
Burn pits
and
in the Middle East,
I have a hard time explaining it.
Go ahead.
Jerry talks Judah? About people that in his chapter that are trying to get VA coverage for everything they inhaled from those burn pits in the Middle East, where they just burn all kinds of toxic stuff. And it's the same battle they're fighting now to get coverage for burn pits that the veterans fought to get coverage for Agent Orange. And meanwhile, they're incurring medical debt, and the government's not saying it's something that they're going to cover.
I'll give you another couple examples. If you're a veteran, and let's say that you suffer an ailment or a seizure or a heart problem, you have to go to the hospital. Well, number one, the VA doesn't have emergent care, so there's no use going to the VA on the weekend. So what you do is you go to the emergency ward of a local hospital, and that is called emergent care, and they will decide whether they're going to pay it or not. And right now, there's over $6 billion owed for emergency hospital care, as well as for ambulances, that has not been paid by the VA and is on the backs of veterans, which is really being eaten by the ambulance services as well as the hospitals.
Yeah, and Jerry's chapter really goes into this brilliantly, in my opinion.
Horrible. And, of course, you know, the military is always the first to deny. They denied radiation damage at Hiroshima and Nagasaki, and there are actually quite a few Americans who were harmed by radiation at Hiroshima and Nagasaki. They denied, of course, they've always denied PTSD until just the last few years, really. They denied Agent Orange in Vietnam. They denied Gulf War Syndrome in the Middle East. And, you know, it's just, I have I wrote a book about radiation with a wonderful researcher named Robert Alvarez, who worked for Senator Glenn's office, the last, you know, a really good U.S. senator from Ohio. And they had to fight years and years and years to get the military to acknowledge Agent Orange poisoning. And it's still not totally covered. And these poor guys, you know, just suffer terribly. It's a horrifying situation.
Yeah. So any vets in your listenership might find this, that Jerry's chapter, let alone the whole book, valuable. And might, you know, a friend of ours keeps on saying, it should be your bedtime reading. I don't know. It sort of keeps me awake.
Well, you might. It should be bedtime reading, but you might not be able to get to sleep.
Yeah, exactly.
No, that's the problem. Yeah, that's really the problem. So what did John Oliver do exactly? He got your book. And,
well, let me explain that. John Oliver was a gift to us.
John in fact,
we're building a statue to John Oliver. That's how much we feel about him. we were struggling as a charity. We were struggling. No one was aware of us. I think our first year we might have brought in $8,000. And this is two men with families. We're literally running up our credit cards. We're borrowing money to get this idea going. And then, as Jude explained earlier, when John Oliver heard of our organization, and he had a show that he was going to put on, in which he was going to send up the entire debt collection and debt buyer industries, except for one problem. And the problem is he really couldn't use the debt that he purchased for comedy. You don't take people's personal information and turn it into a joke. So when they found that out, they did research and they found out that there was only one organization in the United States that was a 501c3 that could legitimately forgive debt. And guess who that was? RIPmedicaldebt.org. So they contacted us. We sat down with them. Every question that they had, we answered. And the show went on. I think it was 2.5 years ago. The show went on. Yeah. And they had John Oliver extolled the virtues of RIP Medical Debt for being able to abolish the portfolio he'd purchased for 9,000 families in Texas, and our website crashes. That's how interested people were in what we were doing. So, but then we started bringing in donations and we started buying more debt. It enabled us this last year alone. Up to this point in time now, last year alone, we had one donor provide us with enough funds to abolish $250 million worth of personal medical debt across the country.
The donor's calling right now. So that's amazing. So how much total debt has RIP Medical Debt retired?
$500 million so far.
Oh, my God. Really?
And by the end of this year, it'll be $1 billion.
We intend to, our goal was, when we started out, was to abolish $1 billion worth of medical debt, which we thought was outlandish. But now, 5 years into the game, we're halfway through, and we think we might be able to abolish another $500 million this year.
That's fantastic.
And something that's really important to know, Harvey, is that people whose debts are forgiven by RIP, or through buying, you know, somebody whose debt is forgiven by through their purchasing the book, you know, some stranger whose debt's forgiven, is because RIP Medical Debt is a charity, RIP stands for Rest in Peace, because they're a charity, a 501c3 charity, that forgiven debt does not count as income on their taxes. Unlike if you have medical student loan debt forgiven, that counts as income. The amount you still owe counts as income. In this case, the beneficiaries don't have to pay anything. It's a gift from a stranger, a random gift of kindness from a stranger. And that's, to me, that's phenomenal.
It is phenomenal. So we're almost to the end here, unfortunately. Talk about End Medical Debt, written by Jerry Ashton, Robert Goff, and Craig Antico. It's at Hoku Publishers. And how do people get a hold of you? Hoku House. How do people get a hold of you?
HokuHouse.com and RIPMedicalDebt.org.
And okay. I believe we also have
a Facebook page
with...
Just look for End Medical Debt on Facebook.
Okay, and you're going to get... Now, tomorrow you'll get a URL from this show, and you can send it around, and posted and get people to listen in, because you've done a... Is there anything else you want to tell people in the last minute or two of our show here?
Well, we would like to tell people that there's hope, even though it looks hopeless. Change is happening. In our book, you're going to find ways of being able to be personally responsible and personally aware so that you don't get savaged by the system that we're involved in. So we want to thank you very much for reading it. Yeah. Judah?
Yeah, education is the first step to activism, Jerry likes to say.
Education, yeah.
All right, so people should get your book and look at the website. And I will right here pledge $108. And
well, thank you.
I hope
wonderfulness.
The people I hope that benefit will be really helped in their lives. It's truly amazing.
And Harvey,
I'll send you
the links that you need.
Okay, please do, and we'll put them in the. Well, you can add them when you get the URL for this show. You can add them to what you send out. And let's do this. And since I am a progressive, I want Medicare for all. So thank you guys very, very much.
Thank you.
Thank you, Eileen Proctor
you,
and the crew in New York.
You.
And we'll be back together with you. Take care. See you next week in Solartopia.
Don't you know we're going to have a soul.